An Osho Talk. The White Lotus. Talks on the Zen Master Bodhidharma. Number 10.
The first question. There is a great deal of hypocrisy in India about sex. People are not even willing to discuss it openly. Yet there is a growing proliferation of an obsession with nude pictures. Will this flood of pornography help? Can it finally bring sex out into the open in India? Men's past has been very stupid, and the whole stupidity has arisen out of a life negative approach, attitude, and all the religions in the past have supported the life negative approach. Not the Buddhas, not the Christ, not the Zarathustras, but the priests, but the professional religious man who has been exploiting the names of Buddhas, Christ, Zarathustras, and exploiting the masses. The priest has found it very helpful to keep people life negative. Because the moment a person is life negative, he becomes weak. And it is easy to exploit the weak, to enslave the weak. It is easy to dominate the weak, to destroy the weak. Hence the priest has found that two things are very essential for man's strength, freedom, consciousness, and both have to be destroyed. One is food, another is sex. Both are basic instincts. The food is needed for the individual to survive, and sex is needed for the race to survive. Without food and sex, humanity will disappear. Knowing this, that these are the essential requirements of a really alive man, priests have been against both. They have supported fasting and they have supported celibacy. Because they have supported fasting, they have made people food obsessed. Any religion that has its orientation in fasting, for example Jainism, is bound to create food obsession in its followers. Any religion that is rooted in its opposition for sex is bound to create sex obsession. Pornography is a byproduct of your so-called religions. It is a religious phenomenon. Excuse me. It is because of your priests that pornography exists. And it is not a new thing. It is as ancient as man. Khajuraho, Konark, Puri, what they are. Pornography in a sculpture. And you can go to the ancient most caves and you will always find pornography in some way or other. You can look into the folk literature, folk songs, folk stories, and you will always find them pornographic. Pornography is as old as the priest. Once the priest comes in, pornography comes as a shadow, is bound to happen. And when you are taught to be life negative, you become afraid of talking things frankly, authentically. You would not like to talk about sex because what people will think about you, you would like to hide it. You will try to create a facade as if sex is non-existential in your life. But deep down, you are boiling. Deep down, 24 hours you are thinking of sex. Modern psychological surveys say that each man thinks at least once about sex in every 3 minutes' time. This is about the irreligious, remember. What to say about the religious? Must be he thinks about sex every 3 seconds. Women think about sex once every 7 minutes. That is a gap between man and woman. That's why women can pretend more that they are far higher, that they are not concerned, that this whole ugliness of sex is man's creation. They are superior beings. But the difference is only a 4 minutes. The man has to go on persuading them 4 minutes more, that's all. Hence the man has to go into a kind of foreplay. Before he can persuade a woman to be normal, to be healthy, at least 4 minutes foreplay is needed. And because man is the aggressive sect, because man's energies are aggressive energies, and the woman is a receptive sex, that too is a great difference. Man has to take the initiative. The woman can pretend that I am not running after you. Mullah Nasruddin and his wife were arguing. And Mullah said, it must have been the most unfortunate moment in my life when I married you. The woman said, but I was not running after you. Mullah said, that is true. No mouse trap ever runs out after the mouse. The mouse trap simply waits. The mouse comes itself. That is true. Mouse or Mullah Nasruddin, it makes no difference. Because women are receptive, they are a little cold. Man is hot. And because women are a receptive sex, they are not much interested in pornography. Because the most aggressive part in men's or woman's body is the eye. There is a difference between men's and women's eye. Of course, not physiological difference, but something very deep and psychological. Men's eye is aggressive. Woman's eye is receptive. Hence, the woman is not very interested in pornography. Moreover, men's sex has something of extroversion in it, and woman's sex has something of introversion in it. Whenever you are making love to a woman, she will close her eyes. Because when you are making love to a woman, she is not much interested in you. She is much interested in what is happening inside her. She closes her eyes. She enjoys the feeling that you trigger into her innermost being. But man is more interested in looking what is happening to the woman. He would like to keep the lights on. Not only that, there are few really religious people who keep automatic cameras in their bedrooms to take pictures, so later on also they can enjoy what was happening. Man is more interested in seeing what is happening to the woman, less interested in his own inner feelings. Kiss a woman and she closes her eyes because she wants to taste the kiss in her interiority. She wants to absorb it. And man would like to see what is happening to the woman. His interest is other directed. Hence man has remained always interested in pornography. But pornography is not a natural phenomenon that has to be reminded again and again. It is a religious phenomenon. Because priests have been so much against it, man has been repressing. And when you repress anything too much, it is bound to assert itself into subtle ways, into hidden ways, into such ways that you are not consciously aware what you are doing. It starts moving in your unconscious mind. Hence the tremendous interest in the woman's body. Pictures, statues, movies, they are all basically either directly or indirectly pornographic. Unless there is something of sex in it, you are not interested. sex and murder are essential for a film to succeed, for a story to be read, for a fiction to be enjoyed. It's strange. Sex and murder, why they are connected? They are connected. If you repress too much, you become murderous. In fact, murdering somebody is a perverted act of sex. Man wants to enter the body of the woman. If he is not allowed, he will start finding any possible way to enter the other's body. He will become homosexual. If he cannot find a woman, then he will find the man. If he cannot find the man, he will find animals. If that too becomes difficult, then he will start creating rubber women, plastic women. So you can keep in your bag, and whenever you need the woman, just pump her a little. And if there is no possibility at all, she becomes enraged. Sex energy repressed becomes anger. It becomes murderous. In fact, psychologists say, all our weapons are nothing but symbols, metaphors for the genital male organ. It is a thrust into the other's body. Our bayonets, our bullets, our swords, they are nothing but. Another offshoot of life negative religions. Now politicians were also interested in repressing sex for this reason, for this very purpose. If people's sex is repressed, they can easily be made to kill others and be killed by others. And the whole human past has been a history of wars and wars. Out of 3,000 years past, we have fought 5,000 wars. It seems absolutely insane. 5,000 wars in 3,000 years, as if we are living here only to kill each other. What has gone with man wrong? No animal kills any other member of its own species. No lion kills another lion, never. No dog kills another dog, never. It is only man. Why it has happened to the man? Because no other animal has the priesthood, the Pope, the Shankaracharya, etc. No other animal has people like Ayatollah Khomeini. Hearing the news that the Shah is suffering from cancer, this so-called religious man, the head of the Iranian religious people, said, "Insha'Allah, God willing, the news is true. And the cancer kills him." And he has issued a statement for the American Iranians that kill this man, cut him into pieces, and send those pieces to Iran. But this has been the attitude of the so-called religious always. murderous. It is repressed sex. Repressed sex is bound to create troubles for you. The husband and wife were having difficulty in deciding what to give up for Lent. But finally, in a fervent spirit of atonement, they agreed on sex. As the weeks slowly passed, they began to regret their choice, but still stuck to it, sleeping in separate bedrooms and also locking the doors to control temptation. Finally, the glorious Easter sun rose, and the wife was awakened by a series of thunderous knocks on her door. "Ah, George," she called out, "I know what you are knocking for." "You are damn right," he yelled back, "but do you know what I am knocking with?" This is natural. Man is the only perverted animal on the earth. All kinds of perversions. And for centuries you have been conditioned to be very cold about sex. And because you are cold about sex, you are cold about everything else. Your very source of warmth disappears. Sex is the source of life. It is how God creates existence. It should be respected, worshipped. It is sacred. Sex is the most sacred phenomenon in existence because it is the base of all life. If life is not sacred, then sex is not sacred. If life is sacred, then sex is sacred. But the politicians and the priests conspired against men. The politician wanted soldiers. The priests wanted stupid slaves. Obedient people. Destroy the dignity of man and he becomes easily an obedient slave. And the best way to destroy his dignity is to make him fight against himself. He starts feeling guilty because he cannot conquer. Now, how can you conquer sex or food? If you fight with your sex, you are dividing yourself into two persons. You are becoming a spirit. You are willingly entering into the world of the schizophrenic. You are becoming ill and diseased. Fighting with your own energy, you can never be victorious. But fighting with your own energy, as if you are making a great fight between your right hand and left hand. Who is going to win? Nobody can win. Just your energies will be dissipated. You will become weaker. And a greater thing will happen. A far long range consequences. If you cannot win over your sex, you will start feeling so guilty, so ugly, so condemned, so unworthy, that you will be ready to bow down to any stupid person. Anybody who can be a good pretender, hypocrite, will become your leader politically, will become your priest religiously.
All that he needs is hypocrisy. All that he needs is cunningness. All that he needs is a facade to hide behind. Your politicians live double lives. Your priests live double lives. One from the front door, another from the back door. And the back door life is their real life. On the front door, those smiles are just false. Those faces looking so innocent are just cultivated. If you want to see the reality of the politician, you will have to see him from his back door. There he is in his nudity, as he is. And so is the priest. And these two kinds of cunning people have dominated humanity. And they found very early that if you want to dominate humanity, make it weak. Make it feel guilty. Make it feel unworthy. Destroy its dignity. Take all glory from it. Humiliate it. And they have found such subtle ways of humiliation that they don't come in the picture at all. They leave it to you to humiliate yourself, to destroy yourself. They have taught you a kind of slow suicide. You ask me, there is a great deal of hypocrisy in India about sex. It is not only a question about sex. Sex is the most fundamental. But then there are many, many branches of it. India is the most hypocrite country in the world because it pretends to be the most religious. Religion and hypocrisy are cousin sisters. To be religious and not to be a hypocrite is a very rare phenomenon. Only once in a while a Buddha, a Bodhidharma, a Kabir, a Jesus. Just once in a while you will find a man who is religious and not hypocrite. But then we never tolerate these people. We poisoned Socrates simply because he was honestly religious. He was so honest that he said, there is no God. Truth is God. He was so honest that he could not say that there is heaven and hell. Because he says, unless I know, how can I make such great statements? He was poisoned and killed. What was his crime? The crime was, in the court, that he was corrupting the youth. Whenever a man like Socrates is there, a lover of truth, a real lover of God, he seems to be corrupting people. In fact, he is trying to make them authentic and true. He is trying to bring them out of their hypocrisies, but that looks to the crowd as corruption. Jesus is crucified for the simple reason, because he is a rebel. Rebel against all hypocrisy. Buddha is stoned. Many efforts were made on his life for the simple reason that he is a sincere man, saying as he sees things. Yes, there is a possibility of transcending sex, but that is not done by repression. sex can be transcended. And it is a great experience to transcend sex. But it cannot be done if you are against it. It can be done only if you befriend the energy. If you absorb the energy. If you find out what is the secret of sexual longing. If you find the key. And the key is not very difficult to find. But the priests have made things such messy that it is almost impossible now to find the key. The key is simple. But thousands of years of wrong conditioning has made it very difficult to know the simple most, the obvious thing. Why people are interested in sex? It is not only a question of biology. It is more a question of spirituality. My own observation is that people are interested in sex because that is the only naturally given window into God. A natural gift in deep orgasmic states. When the lovers meet and merge and melt and disappear into each other for a single moment, time disappears, mind disappears, egos disappear, and one has a taste of meditation, of samadhi, of superconsciousness. That taste will give you the key. If you can attain to no mind, no ego, no time, without sex, sex will disappear from your life. There is no need for it. But that is a disappearance. Not that you have denied it. Not that you have rejected a part of your being. It is absorbed. It is transformed. Then the same crude energy of sex, the same biological energy, reaches to such heights. First it becomes love, then it becomes prayer. It is the same energy, moving, soaring upwards. Remember, I am not saying that sex cannot be transcended. Sex can be transcended, should be transcended, but not through repression. Nobody has ever been able to transcend it through repression. If you repress sex, you become cold. If you become cold, you lose the orgasmic quality. One day Mullah Nasruddin found, while making love to his wife, for a moment, he found something new. He asked his wife, "Am I hurting you, dear?" She said, "No, why? Why you ask such a question?" He said, "I must have imagined. I thought for a moment that you moved." Now 20 years they have been married. Father of 7 children. And the wife has never moved. That is not thought to be right. Good women don't enjoy love making. It is only the bad women who enjoy love making. Good women simply lie down there, dead, utterly cold. And when the woman remains cold, the man's orgasmic experience remains local, genital. It does not reach to his soul. It does not reach to his whole body. All his cells and all his fibers of being are not thrilled, are not in a dance. It is poor, very poor. It is a release, a relief, but not an orgasmic experience. Yes, he is relieved of a burden. His sexual energy was overflooding. He has relieved the energy. But it is not really orgasmic ecstasy. He has not known any timelessness through it, any egolessness through it, any mindlessness through it. He has not penetrated the ultimate through it. It has been a sheer wastage as far as spiritual experience is concerned. Biologically it is okay. He may give birth to children. But he will not be able to give birth to his own being. His soul will remain unborn. Now the women have become so cold because they have listened to the priest so long and the priest have been praising them very highly. They have been telling them that they are the most spiritual people in the world. It is through the woman the priest has destroyed. Woman's orgasmic dimension and men's orgasmic heights. Men still can have a little bit of orgasm, just a flicker, nothing much which can transform you. And the woman has completely forgotten. In the East, particularly in India, I don't think that any woman ever achieves to orgasmic joy. In the West also the same has been case in the past, just within these 30-40 years, because of the women's liberation movement. Few women have become orgasmic. Not many, only 10%. 90% women in the West also are still living in a primitive stage. And 100% women are living in a primitive stage in India. They don't know what orgasm is. They have no idea of it. They have never experienced it. Now nothing can be more cruel. This is really cutting the very roots of humanity. It is destroying humanity from its very foundation. The temple cannot be built. A switchman was accosted by a streetwalker down the railroad yard. She convinced him to visit with her in a nearby sedge. The railroad man, not too terribly enthusiastic, decided to use an iron rail spike instead of his pecker. For 10 minutes, neither of the participants spoke. Then finally he asked, "Like it?" "I'm sure glad you said something," answered the woman. "Your tool is so cold, I was afraid you were dead." Man has become too cold. And when man becomes too cold in his reality, his fantasies start becoming more and more stronger. That's what pornography is. When the body is repressed sexually, sex moves into the head. Pornography is sex through the head. It is as stupid as you fantasize about food in the head, and you think that is going to nourish you. It is not going to nourish you. You will be starved to death. Real food is needed to nourish you. Pornography is sex repressed in its natural space, has asserted itself into the head. And there are many dangers in it. One danger is, if you become too much interested in pornography, which has happened all over the world, then the real woman does not look so appealing, and the real man does not look so appealing. Then a great problem arises. Your fantasy needs a woman that you have seen in Playboy magazine. But you cannot find that woman anywhere. Whatsoever you will find will fall short. Now nothing will satisfy you. Slowly, slowly, reality becomes more unreal and the unreal becomes more real. But the whole blame goes to the so-called religious people. And they are the people who want men to be freed from all kinds of bondage. They want men to be freed from the bondage of sex, and they are the people who are keeping men in sexual bondage. They are the culprits. They are the criminals. But they seem to be great moralists, Puritans, against pornography, against kissing in the films, hugging on the streets, against all kind of warm relationships, against any expression of passionate love. They make everybody cold. Then these cold people start moving towards the head. There is no other way. Where else you can go? Pornography will disappear the day priests disappear. Otherwise it is not going to disappear. And remember, prostitutes will disappear the day the priests disappear. Prostitute is the counterpart of the priest. If the priest remains, the prostitute is going to remain. The prostitute is the creation of the priest. You ask me, there is a great deal of hypocrisy in India about sex. People are not even willing to discuss it openly. Yet there is a growing proliferation of and obsession with nude pictures. That is natural. If people don't talk about it, if they are not courageous enough to talk about it frankly, if they cannot live their lives naturally, they are bound to find some underground ways. Nature is persistent. It is not easy to transcend nature. To transcend nature needs great skill. Buddha says great upaya, great skill, great art, great understanding. Yes, transcendence is beautiful. It brings you great benediction. But before that, you have to be immensely artful, understanding, meditative. This is not the way to go beyond it. In that sense, pornography is a help in two ways. It is a help for the victims of the priests. The victims need it. Otherwise they will go crazy. They will go mad. The pornography keeps them sane. It serves a great humanitarian purpose. You may not have thought about it in that way. Pornography serves a great purpose. It keeps people a little bit sane and healthy, because their sexuality can have an underground outlet. If you close all the outlets, then people will start exploding into insanity. And if pornography is allowed, accepted, in movies, in TVs, in films, in magazines, in books, it will help people to come out of their hiding places. It will be beneficial. It will help people to talk about sex more clearly, more truly, more sincerely. Sex will not be a taboo anymore. And whenever something comes in the open, great changes happen. Bring your inner being into the open, in the wind, in the sun, in the rain, and you will be surprised. You are becoming cleaner, purer, weightless. Your understanding grows, your integrity grows, your self-respect grows, your independence grows, and you become less and less dependent on others, political leaders, religious priests. In my vision of life, the world would be a beautiful world if we can get rid of politicians and priests. These are the persons who are not allowing humanity to live its life totally. Yes, Silvera, pornography can help. It can finally bring sex out into the open. And if people start discussing about it openly, frankly, without anything holding back, without any prejudices, condemnations, because it is a natural phenomenon, as natural as the flowers, as natural as the stars. If people start talking about, studying about it naturally, without any guilt, two things will happen. The most strange thing will be, pornography will disappear. Who is interested in a nude picture if he can attain to orgasmic joy with a woman? Unless he is utterly stupid, why he should be interested? A picture is just a picture. There is nothing, nobody. Just few colors arranged in a certain way and few lines. You are not deceived by a food in the picture. You don't carry that picture close to your heart, thinking that whenever you are hungry, you will look at the picture and it is going to satisfy you. But you go on carrying nude pictures close to your heart. The man who thinks that he can nourish himself and live on this nourishment by looking, watching at pictures of delicious food is a fool. And so is the person who thinks that by carrying nude pictures he can have any insight into the ultimate height of sex, into orgasmic experience. Once a man came to Picasso. He was a realist. And he said to Picasso that your pictures are absolutely unrealistic. And I am a realist philosopher. And I have come to tell you that why you are wasting your time. Be realistic. Picasso asked, what do you mean by being realistic? He immediately took a picture from his bag of his wife, showed it to Picasso, said, this is a photograph of my wife. Exactly. It depicts how my wife is. This is a realistic picture. And I have seen your pictures of women. It is so difficult to find what you really want to depict. And that is true. Once a woman had asked Picasso to make a portrait of her, and he made, and he took 6 months and demanded a fabulous price for it. The woman said, okay, I will give you, but just one thing. My nose is not right in the portrait, so you make it right. Picasso looked at the picture and said, that is impossible. The woman said, why it is impossible? I am ready to pay. He said, that is not the question. Now I don't know where I have painted the nose. So this man was right, showing him a picture of his wife. Picasso looked at the picture and said, this is a realistic thing? The man said, yes, absolutely representative, absolutely realistic. Picasso said, then you have a very small wife. And very flat too. A photograph is a photograph, flat. You cannot find any curves of your wife in the photograph. You can go on searching for lives together. You will not find anything. There is nothing. One thing will be if pornography becomes an accepted thing. And there is nothing wrong in it. If somebody enjoys seeing a nude picture, it is nobody else's business to interfere. Neither the law, nor the government, nor the police has any right to interfere. If he enjoys it, he is simply enjoying a picture, is not interfering with anybody's life. But he seems to be doing something wrong. In fact, enjoyment has become wrong. For thousands of years we have been told that to enjoy yourself is something like sin. To be miserable is okay. To be joyous is wrong. So we destroy people's joy in every possible way. We interfere in their private lives. Now this is absolutely personal, a person enjoying a nude picture. It is nobody's business to come into it. But the police is there, the magistrate is there, the law is there, the government is there, the priest is there, and the whole crowd, just because he is enjoying a picture. And he is enjoying the picture because of these same people. These are the people who have created the whole problem. First they create the problem, and then they are there to advise you how to get rid of it. Two men used to do a business. They were partners. The first will come into a town and in the night will throw coal tar on people's windows and doors. And after 3-4 days, the second will come to clean coal tar. If anybody wants, he was ready to clean coal tar. And he will clean the coal tar. By that time, the other partner will be destroying some other town. This way they earn much money. A beautiful job. No investment. One goes on destroying people's windows, their glasses, and the other comes to clean them. This is what your priests, your police, your politicians have been doing down the ages. They destroy you. And then they are ready to help you. They throw you in the mud, and then they are there, great saviors, to save you. In the first place, who has thrown you in the mud? But then, if you are not thrown in the mud, they can't be the saviors. To be saviors, they have to throw you into the mud first, and then they will save you. And their names will remain in the history. And they will be talked about for centuries as great men. I love the ordinary, the natural, the simple man. I have no respect for your great men, so-called great men. I have tremendous respect for the ordinary, natural human being. Pornography can be of great help. It will help you to get rid of your priests. But alone, it won't be of much inner growth. You will have to seek, inquire into your sexual energy far more deeply. You will have to travel to the deepest core of your being and find out what it is that attracts you. Have you ever watched animals making love? If you have not watched, watch. And you will be surprised. One great revelation will be there, waiting for you, that animals don't enjoy making love. Now that is an established fact. No animal enjoys making love. It is almost a compulsion, a natural compulsion, so he has to go into it. At the moment the love act is finished, the female and the male go their ways. And you see their faces in their eyes, sad they are, frustrated, maybe thinking deep down, why they go in this nonsense again and again. It is only men who has the capacity to attain to orgasmic joy. Sex is animal, but sex with joy is human. It is something absolutely human, a prerogative of human beings, with great joy, with warmth. Animals making love look almost as if they are fighting, as if there is a quarrel, as if the male is attacking the female, and the female is simply accepting it. If she does not accept, the male can go even more aggressive, and it may prove fatal. So she simply accepts and yields, but feels humiliated. And the man also seems to be at a loss why he is doing it. But in human beings, it is a totally different phenomenon. It is a very soft and delicate affair. It is poetry. It is music. It is the source of all poetry, all music, all great art. Just pornography won't help much. A little bit, of course. But you will have to go into deeper explorations of sexual energies. You will have to learn something of Tantra again. That's my whole effort here, to introduce a new Tantra to the world, a new vision of love and the possibilities of love, and an insight into the reality of orgasm. Because orgasm is your greatest source of finding God, harmony, truth, the universal unity of all life. If you can be one with one woman, one man, you have the secret key in your hands. You can be one with the whole universe, with the whole cosmos. I am trying to give you a totally new religion, a religion which loves life, a religion which affirms life, a religion which is in deep love affair with the universe. The old religions are finished, their days are gone. Humanity needs a new perspective. Humanity needs a totally new mind, a new man who loves life, who is drunk with the joy of life, who knows how to dance with trees and how to sing with birds, and who is not against anything, but who is always ready to transform things into higher planes. Yes, sex can be transformed into love, and love can be transformed into prayer. When sex becomes prayer, you have arrived home. The second question, when you said, I was only pretending to be a disciple, you demolished me completely. I was crushed. The bottom of everything dropped out. But now, 24 hours later, I must confess that I am feeling great and awake. It is like a new morning. Whatever you decide to do with me, I am grateful. Santosh, I hit you hard only to make you awake. It is out of compassion and love. There is no other reason, no other motive at all. I have nothing to gain from you. I have no desire to be fulfilled. I can die at this very moment because I have nothing to do tomorrow. Each moment is complete. Each moment is more than enough. So if sometimes I hit you, remember always, it must be because I feel you worthy of being hit. I don't hit anybody and everybody. I hit only the chosen people. I hit only when I see the potential. When I see that the hit is going to wake you up. In the beginning, of course, it is a painful experience. It is a thunderbolt from the sky and so unexpected. Now Santos was not expecting. And suddenly the sword descends on his throat. And before he can say anything, the work is done. It is a very subtle work. It took you 24 hours, Santos, to see the point. But even if you can see after 24 hours, it is very soon. There are people who will not see it for months, or for years, or for lives. I am happy that you are feeling great and awake, that you are feeling like a new morning. Some rock has been destroyed which was hindering you coming close to me. Some door has been opened. And I don't bother about keys. If keys are missing, I hammer the lock. I am happy that you understood the point. Don't forget it again. Mind tends to forget. Mind is a forgetfulness. You have to continuously remember where you are, why you are here. You are not living in the mundane way, in the marketplace. You are living in a Buddha field. You have become part of a great pilgrimage. Be aware of it. Be aware of the great opportunity. Don't remain unconscious with me. Because the more you are conscious, the more is the possibility that before I leave the body, many of you would have become enlightened. My effort is this. that I would like to leave thousands of people enlightened. And it is not impossible. And every day I feel the possibility is becoming more and more actual. More and more people are becoming attuned with me, are feeling at home with me. Don't lag behind. Remember it now. Of course, if you forget again, I will hammer again. And next time, it is going to be more painful. Because you will need then more hammering so that you can remember. Be like the horse Buddha talks about, for whom only the shadow of the whip is enough. Yes, an intelligent person need not be told again and again the same thing. And Santosh is intelligent. One of the most intelligent people who are here. But asleep. Great potential. Great possibility. But in the seed. The time has come, Santosh. Fall in the soil. Let the seed die, so that you can be born. The third question. My love life drama now reflects an old saying of Humphrey Bogart's, "Women, they are hell to live with and hell to live without. What to do?" Abhiyana. One has to pass through this hell. One has to experience both the hells of living with a woman and of living without a woman. And it is not only true about women, it is exactly true about men too. So don't be a male chauvinist pig. It is applicable both the ways. It is double-edged sword. Women are also tired with living with men, and they are also frustrated when they have to live alone. It is one of the most fundamental human dilemma. It has to be understood. You cannot live without a woman because you don't know how to live with yourself. You are not meditative enough. Meditation is the art of living with yourself. It is nothing else than that. Simply that. The art of being joyously alone. A meditator can sit joyously alone for months, for years. He does not hanker for the other because his own inner ecstasy is so much, is so overpowering. Who bothers about the other? If the other comes in his life, it is not a need. It is a luxury. And I am all for luxury, because luxury means you can enjoy it if it is there, and you can enjoy when it is not there. A need is a difficult phenomenon. For example, bread and butter are needs, but the flowers in the garden are a luxury. You can live without the flowers. You will not die. But you cannot live without bread and butter. The man who cannot live with himself, the other is a need, absolute need. Because whenever he is alone, he is bored with himself. So bored that he wants some occupation with somebody else. Because it is a need, it becomes a dependence. You have to depend on the other. And because it becomes a dependence, you hate. You rebel. You resist. Because it is a slavery. Dependence is a kind of a slavery. Nobody wants to be a slave. Abhiyana meets a woman. Abhiyana is not able to live alone. The woman is also not able to live alone. That's why she is meeting Abhiyana. Otherwise there is no need. Both are bored with themselves, thinking the other will help to get rid of the boredom. Yes, in the beginning, it looks like that, but only in the beginning. As they settle together, soon they see that the boredom is not destroyed. It is not only doubled but multiplied. Now first they were bored with themselves, now they are bored with the other too. Because the closer you come to the other, the more you know the other becomes almost part of you. That's why if you see a couple walking bored, you can be certain they are married. If they are not bored, you can be certain they are not married. The man must be walking with somebody else's wife. That's why so much joy. Once I was traveling in a train. In my compartment there was a woman, and her companion used to come on every station, sometimes with ice cream, sometimes with fruits, sometimes with this, sometimes with that. I asked the woman, "Are you married? Who is this man?" She said, "He is my husband, and we have been married 7 years." I said, "Absolutely wrong. If he was your husband, he would have disappeared into his compartment and he would not have turned at all. He is coming on every station. I can't believe you. You be true with me." She looked puzzled. She said, "But how you came to know?" I said, "There is nothing much in it. It is a simple thing. He comes so ecstatic. He can't be your husband." She said, "You are right. He is not my husband. He is my friend's husband. And secretly we are going to the Himalayas just to have 7 or 10 days there to be together. He is my lover." When you are in love, when you have not yet persuaded the woman, and the woman has not persuaded you to be together forever. You both pretend great joy, and something of it is true too, because of hope that who knows, I may come out of my boredom, of my anguish, of my anxiety, of my aloneness. This woman may help me. And the woman is also hoping. But once you are together, soon the hopes disappear, despair sets in again. You are now bored, and the problem has become multiplied. Now, how to get rid of this woman? Because you are not meditative, you need others to keep you occupied. And because you are not meditative, you are not able to love either. Because love is an overflowing joy. You are bored with yourself. What you have got to share with the other. Hence, being with other also becomes hell. Japal Sat is right in that sense that the other is hell. The other is not hell really. Only appears so. The hell exists in you, in your non-meditativeness, in your incapacity to be alone and ecstatic. And both are unable to be alone and ecstatic. Now both are on each other's throats, continuously trying to snatch some happiness from you. And both are doing that. And both are beggars. I have heard one psychoanalyst met the other psychoanalyst on the street. The first said to the other, "You look fine. How am I?" Nobody knows about oneself. Nobody is acquainted with oneself. We see others' faces. A woman looks beautiful. A man looks beautiful, smiling, all smiles. We don't know his anguish. Maybe all those smiles are just a facade to deceive others and to deceive himself. Maybe behind those smiles there are great tears. Maybe he is afraid if he does not smile, he may start weeping and crying. But when you see the other, you simply see the surface. You fall in love with the surface. But when you will come closer, soon you will know inner depths of the other person are as dark as your own. He is a beggar as you are. Now two beggars begging from each other. Then it becomes hell. Yes, Abhyana, you are right. Women, they are hell to live with and hell to live without. It is not a question of women at all. Not a question of men. It is a question of meditation and love. Meditation is the source from where joy wells up within you. And it starts overflowing you. If you have joy enough to share, then only your love will be a contentment. If you don't have joy enough to share, your love is going to be tiring, exhausting, boring. So whenever you are with a woman, you are bored and you want to get rid of her. And whenever you are alone, you are bored with yourself and you want to get rid of your loneliness and you seek and search a woman. This is a vicious circle. You can go on moving like a pendulum from one corner to another your whole life. See the real problem. The real problem has nothing to do with man and woman. The real problem has something to do with meditation and the flowering of meditation in love, in joy, in blissfulness. First meditate, be blissful, then much love will happen on its own accord. Then being with others is beautiful, and being alone is also beautiful. Then it is simple too. You don't depend on others, and you don't make others dependent on you. Then it is always a friendship, a friendliness. It never becomes a relationship. It is always a relatedness. You relate, but you don't create a marriage. Marriage is out of fear. Relatedness is out of love. You relate as long as things are moving beautiful. You share. And if you see that the moment has come to depart, because your path separate from this crossroads, you say goodbye with great gratitude, with all that the other has been to you, with all the joys and all the pleasures and all the beautiful moments that you have shared with the other. With no misery, with no pain, you simply separate. Nobody can guarantee that two persons will be happy together always, because persons change. When you meet a woman, she is one person. You are one person. After 10 years, you will be another person, she will be another person. It is like river. The water is continuously flowing. The persons who had fallen in love are no more there. Both are no more there. Now you can go on clinging to a certain promise given by somebody else. You have not given it. A real man of understanding never promises for tomorrow. He can only say for the moment. A really sincere man cannot promise at all. How can he promise? Who knows about tomorrow? Tomorrow may come, may not come. Tomorrow may come, I will not be the same. You will not be the same. Tomorrow may come, you may find somebody with whom you fit more deeply. I may find somebody with whom I go more harmoniously. The world is vast. Why exhaust it today? Keep doors open. Keep alternatives open. I am against marriage. It is marriage that creates problems. It is marriage that has become very ugly. The most ugly institution in the world is marriage. Because it forces people to be phony. They have changed. But they go on pretending that they are the same. One old man, 80 years old, was celebrating his 50th wedding ceremony with his wife who was 75. Both had gone to the same hotel, to the same hill station where they had gone for their honeymoon. The nostalgia. Now he is 80, she is 75. They booked the same hotel and the same room. They were trying to live those beautiful days 50 years back again. And when they were going to sleep, the woman said, "Have you forgotten? Are you not going to kiss me the way you had kissed me on our honeymoon night?" The old man said, okay. So he got up. The woman asked, where are you going? He said, I am going to take my teeth from the bathroom. Everything has changed. Now this kiss without teeth or with false teeth is not going to be the same kiss. And the man says, okay. The journey must have been tiring. An 80-year-old. But people go on behaving as if they are the same. Two, one old woman and one old man got married. It must have happened in America. Where else? In America, nobody seems to be getting old. Everybody is pretending to be young. So they went for the honeymoon. The old man took the wife's hand in his hand, pressed it for 2-3 minutes. That was all that they could do as far as love was concerned. Then they went to sleep. Next day, he again pressed the old woman's hand, only for 1 minute. 3 minutes may have been too long. And the third day when he was going to press the hand, the woman said, turning towards the other side, today I have headache. Very few people really grow up. Even if they become aged, they don't grow up. Growing old is not growing up. Real maturity comes through meditation. Learn to be silent, peaceful, still. Learn to be in no mind. That has to be the beginning for all sannyasins. Nothing else can be done before that. And everything else becomes easier after that. When you find yourself utterly happy and blissful, even if the Third World War happens and the whole world disappears leaving you alone, it won't affect you. You will be still sitting under your tree doing vipassana. The day that moment comes in your life, now you can share your joy. Now you are able to give love. Before that, it is going to be misery, hopes and frustrations, desires and failures, dreams, and then dust in your hand and in your mouth. Beware, don't waste time. The earlier you become attuned with no mind, the better it is. Then many things can flower in you: love, creativity, spontaneity, joy, prayer, gratitude, God. The last question. I never remember what you say to me. What should I do? There is no need to remember what I say. Words are not important at all. You are not students here. No examination is going to be. You are not required to remember my words. Just imbibe me. The spirit of the place. The taste of my being. Let my silence reach you. If words you forget, it's perfectly okay. They have to be forgotten. Otherwise they will clutter your mind. I am not here to give you more information. I am here to give you transformation. For transformation, memory is not a question. So don't be worried. Many people become worried that we go on forgetting what you say. You are still thinking as if you are in a university or in a school, college, and you will be examined later on and you will have to reproduce. Nothing has to be reproduced. Nobody is going to ask anything. At least I am not going to ask you any questions ever. I use words to convey silence. I use words to keep your mind occupied so that there can be a heart-to-heart communion. The mind becomes occupied with the words, and like a thief, I can enter in your heart. I have my own devices. I tell you a joke, you start laughing, you open your mouth, and I'm in. A joke for you. Sol and Abe, two 85-year-old widowers, were sitting on a park bench in St. Petersburg, Florida. Sol was telling Abe about a local girl that he had dated the night before. "What did you do?" asked Abe. "We checked into a motel, got in bed, and I sang. Those were the days." "That sounds like a great evening," said Abe. "Do you mind if I take her out tonight?" "Sure, go ahead." The next day Sol said, "How did it go last night?" "Fine." "What did you do?" "Well, we got a motel room and got into bed. I could not remember the song, so I screwed her." Enough for today.